This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. If and when employment begins to catch up with the economic recovery, many of those looking for work won't be able to find jobs at the companies they used to work for, or even in the same industries. Economists say a lot of manufacturing jobs are gone for good, and now some kinds of white-collar work is being sent overseas. The answer, we're told, is education and retraining. In 1998, President Clinton signed the Workforce Investment Act, which established career centers, and President Bush has pushed an initiative that focuses on community colleges. Few of us can now expect to spend our working lives in one job or even one type of job, so we're all likely to need new skills somewhere down the road. But these current programs have their critics. Many retrained workers can't find jobs to fit their new skills, and many of the jobs that are available don't seem to require much in the way of education. The Bureau of Labor Statistics projects that 7 of the 10 occupations with the greatest growth over the next 10 years will generate low-wage service jobs. Later in the program, we'll focus on the politics of Jean-Bertrand Aristide's return to the Caribbean. The former Haitian president has temporary asylum in Jamaica. And we'll find out more about Morocco and terrorism. But first, retraining. If you're out of work, was retraining available? If so, did it help you find a new job? Did you go to a government program, or did you go to school on your own? Give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address, TOTN@npr.org. And joining us now from his office in New York is reporter Stephen Greenhouse. He covers labor and workplace issues for the New York Times. And nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Nice to be here, Neil.
The emphasis on retraining is, it seems, a sign of the economic times. Is there any data to show that this actually works?
It's a mix. You know, the Trade Readjustment Assistance Act helps pay for retraining people, and many of them do find jobs, but many of them don't. And there are many studies, some showing it works and some showing that there are retrained people who are still stuck in Ohio, still stuck in Michigan without being able to find other jobs.
So they retrained from being a machinist to doing something else, and what might that something else have been?
Some might go from being a machinist to being a higher level machinist, and the first job might have gone to China, and the second job might have been replaced by a higher technology. You know, if you're a machinist who gets trained to be a physician's assistant, you know, there are a lot of jobs now for physician's assistants, so you can get a job that way very, very often.
But physician's assistants jobs don't necessarily pay what machinists used to make.
That's absolutely right.
And as you suggested in your answer, you know, we tend to put a lot of the blame on offshoring, but productivity and improved technology, that's a lot of this too.
Absolutely. It's hard to measure. It's hard to determine why we've lost so many jobs. Clearly, productivity is increasing. Technology, automation continue to replace a lot of workers. But as you said, Neil, there's this new phenomenon called offshoring, where more and more white-collar jobs are going overseas.
Now, you wrote an article for The Times earlier this month where you talked to government officials and economists about layoffs. What did they tell you? Are they concerned?
They are concerned. First, they're concerned that general job growth has been so slow. In the past 3 years, the number of jobs in the nation is down by over 2 million. And there's this huge mystery why, when the economy is growing at 4, 5, 6% a quarter, why there isn't strong job growth along with it. And on one hand, economists say it's fabulous. We're enjoying greater productivity. We can, you know, the economy can produce much more without as many workers. But the flip side, the negative flip side is, well, it appears that the economy doesn't need as many workers. And this is dovetailed with this new shift, new trend in which many companies are moving jobs offshore to India, to China. Their call center jobs, their software design jobs, their architecture jobs.
Now, in the meantime, what are the latest numbers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics tell us about the kinds of jobs that will be available over the next 10 years, those growth industries they pinpointed?
Every year, the Bureau of Labor Statistics issues what it calls 10-year job projections. And in January, it released its latest report. And the bad news, I guess, is that 7 of the top 10 occupations are low-paying occupations that generally pay less than $20,000, less than $18,000 a year. The
things what janitors, cashiers, that sort of thing.
Nurses is the fast in terms of absolute numbers. Nurses is the fastest growing category. Fortunately, that's not low paying.
Mm-hmm.
College teachers, post-secondary teachers is the second category. That's also not low paying. Now seven out of the next eight are not high paying jobs. Retail salespersons is number three. There'll be 596,000 more jobs. Customer service representatives, which can be, you know, people who take your phone calls to answer your questions or someone at a supermarket to answer your questions. Then comes food preparation workers. Then comes cashiers. Then comes janitors. Then comes general and operations managers. That's not a low-paying job. And 9 and 10 are waiters and nurses' aides.
Hmm.
And you know, waiters, nurses' aides, cashier jobs, they often pay just $6, $7, $8 an hour.
I don't know if these projections always catch the next wave of employment. We may, over the next 10 years, see a huge boom in nanotechnology specialists or something else that nobody anticipated. But, again, that's what the statistics show. Given all those, it doesn't seem to me that you're going to need a lot of retraining to work as a cashier.
In ways, these numbers give too negative a perspective because – you know, these are the largest growth in absolute numbers, whereas the largest percentage growth is in some higher tech areas like software engineering.
Mm-hmm.
Even though many software jobs are being offshored, there are large percentage increases in the number of software jobs, 40, 50, 60% over the next 10 years. So there will be plenty of, high tech jobs, but perhaps not enough to match the large number of people graduating with degrees in computer engineering and software engineering.
Mm-hmm. Let's get some callers on the line. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. We're talking about retraining, the need for it, and whether it works. And our first caller is Marianne, who's with us from Paris, Tennessee.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Marianne.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have moved 10 years ago to a small county, a rural place in Tennessee, where I pretty much worked around the farm. And then at the time where I needed to get a job, I had one for about a year and then lost it from lack of help.
Mm-hmm.
I went on the WIA program. I was certified to qualify for it over a year ago. And about a week before the funds became available, they canceled the program in my county. Now, the next county over, they're advertising on TV for people to come take the funds, please.
And you can't get there?
No. Well, I can't. I am in my county. I have to take funds from my county.
I see. And at this point, another move would be very difficult.
Well, I have a farm, so we're dug in.
I see. Is that, there must be a lot of people in Marianne's category, Stephen Greenhouse.
I guess. I'm embarrassed to say I do not know the rules about Tennessee and about individual counties. Generally, the training assistance funds are for people laid off from manufacturing jobs. And if you're laid off from a manufacturing job, you can generally get several years' worth of job training plus an 18 extra months of unemployment insurance. I'm not familiar with the individual rules of funding of county and a neighboring county in Tennessee.
WIA, we should remind listeners, is the Workforce Investment Act. Well, Marianne, we wish you the best of luck.
Well, thank you. They recruited me. They came after me and said, we can help you. And then when the time came for funding, it wasn't there.
Yeah. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Let's get another caller on the line. And this is Bruce. And Bruce is with us from Williamsburg, Virginia.
Hello there.
Hi, you're on the air, Bruce.
Well, thank you for having me.
Sure.
I was working as an aircraft maintenance mechanic for the Navy back in 96, and we were a victim of the BRAC realignment and closures.
Uh-huh.
I lost my position with the government, took my federal retirement and paid for my undergrad, went for a graduate degree in aeronautical science, and I did that on student loans, and now we have a slump from 9-1-1 in the aviation field. And for a bit of levity, I tell people that my biggest fear is I'm going to be paying back my student loan with my Social Security check. And unfortunately, there's going to be no Social Security.
Well,
what do you do when you're over 50 years old and the window of opportunity for retraining is getting smaller and smaller. And my biggest concern is what to? I mean, you know, food service doesn't throw me.
Yeah, and you paid for the schooling yourself, I assume.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I gave up my federal retirement to pay for my undergrad, and I paid for a graduate with student loans, and I'm in the hole big time with no... I spoke with someone on the phone in the student loan servicing center that people have resigned themselves that they're never going to pay this off in their lifetime.
Well, at this point, what do you think you're going to do?
Well, I tell you what, I don't want to sound like a pity party, but the truth of the matter is that the government does wonderful things in programs to help people. Well, what about me? I bought the sales pitch that education is going to make life better, and unfortunately, it's not happening.
Stephen Greenhouse, there are a lot of people who, like Bruce, go out and get education on their own. They don't go to one of these government programs.
Generally, the experts will say it is smart to go increase your education once you're laid off because that will, in theory, increase your chances of getting a good job. But, you know, it's somewhat of a crapshoot. You know, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, it probably seemed very smart to increase your education in aeronautics. And now we're seeing Boeing laying off a lot of people. The military industry has laid off a lot of people. Hopefully, maybe for you, in 3 years or 5 years or 7 years, they'll be hiring many people again.
But as he
probably don't want to wait that long.
Yeah, as he points out, he's now over 50, and his opportunities are shrinking.
I see many, many people switching from manufacturing jobs to jobs in healthcare because they see that's the one sector in the United States they know is going to continue to grow.
Bruce, I wish we had a better answer for you.
Well, you know, it would be difficult to take all this experience and knowledge that I have and transition it to radiology at this point, especially when you clear the 50 mark.
I think you might want to look into the offshoring on radiology, too. That might not be the biggest investment to make right now.
Well, unfortunately, the saddest part of the whole series is scenario is that there are really no good options left for me anymore. Mm. I'd like to go to the government for help. They offer help to a lot of – here's one sad – thought that if you take out a student loan and it's federally subsidized and you stay all the way to your PhD, the government will subsidize that loan. If you take a break, you take a year off to work and then go back, the government will not subsidize your loan after that point, so I'm told. And the interesting thing is that it's a blatant case of prejudice.
Bruce, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you for your time.
And good luck to you. Stephen Greenhouse, you mentioned, he obviously made a choice that seemed like the right idea at the time to further his education in the aviation industry. And obviously since 9/11, that's not worked out so well. As people look at these job categories projected by the Labor Department, is that where they should go for advice on which industries to invest their education in?
I think it's helpful to look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics projections. It's good to speak to job counselors. But as you know better than I, Neil, the projections, the economy keeps changing. You know, in these numbers I read to you before, they say the number of cashiers is going to jump tremendously. But now we see retailers like Home Depot having people, replacing cashiers by having people check themselves out, check out their own goods. So maybe we'll see slower growth in cashiers. 20 years ago, probably hardly anyone was projecting huge, huge growth for software engineers. I'm sure the BLS wasn't predicting that back in the 1980s, and yet that skyrocketed. So maybe we'll see a boom in nanotechnologies. Maybe we'll see a boom in biotech that we don't foresee now, but that might create tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of jobs.
We'll be back with more on this subject when we come back from a short break, including a conversation with the AFL-CIO's liaison to dislocated workers for the state of Minnesota to see what kind of questions he gets from dislocated workers and what kind of advice he has for them. If you'd like to join our conversation, it's 800-989-8255 or send us an email, totn@npr.org. The subject is retraining. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the experience of upgrading or changing your job skills after you've been laid off or let go. If you've gone through the experience, what did you think about it? Did it help you find a job? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. The email address, TOTN@NPR.org. Our guest is Stephen Greenhouse. He writes about labor and workplace issues for the New York Times. And joining us now is someone whose job requires him to meet with labor workers who've just gotten their pink slips. Mike Goldman is the AFL-CIO's liaison for dislocated workers in the state of Minnesota. He joins us now on the phone from Arden Hills, which is just north of St. Paul. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Neil, for inviting me.
It must be a pretty tough job.
It is. I wish that it was the type of work that I could perhaps come to an end. But the way the economy is going right now, I don't really see any end to it.
What do you do when you first arrive at a plant or a factory where your services are needed?
Well, one of the first things that I do as part of the state rapid response team is try to gain cooperation from the employer, from any unions that represent workers at that plant. And most importantly, we try to meet with the workers that are actually going to be affected so that we can give them information about the public resources available to them and also gather information about them so that we can do some planning and tailoring on the services that are provided to them.
Mm-hmm. What kind of services are available?
Well, I work primarily with the Dislocated Worker Program, and that's a number of different employment and training services. It is not entirely training and retraining. It's ultimately geared to getting people reemployed in suitable jobs as quickly as possible.
Now, which industries are in there in Minnesota are laying off workers or are closing down?
Well, virtually all the manufacturing sectors are seeing some hits, and we're seeing a great deal of activity in a lot of the white-collar types of businesses and service industries.
Some of the people with whom you work must have probably been at these jobs for quite a while, meaning a very tough adjustment for them. What do you say to them?
Well, first of all, I tell them there's life after layoff. I've been through this myself. That's exactly how I came to this work, and I've seen thousands of workers that I've met with over the last 11 years successfully make the transition. It's not easy for everyone.
What did you do before you did this?
I worked in a manufacturing plant for 17 years, and our plant closed in 1990, and so I became a dislocated worker and used the program to retrain. I developed a new career path as a counselor for dislocated workers. And then a little over 11 years ago, I was hired by the AFL-CIO for this position.
I guess somewhat regretfully, that's a growth industry.
It is. Unfortunately, what I would say is there's an astounding number of people working in the system who have shared experiences like mine.
Let's get a caller on the line. Peggy is with us from Williamsburg, Virginia.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
Hi. I heard you talking about the subject, and I'm living it right now. I'm a NAFTA student. I'm in a government program. I get an unemployment check. They pay for my school, my books, and everything.
What do you mean by saying you're a NAFTA student?
Well, my employer laid all of us off from a John Deere factory in Williamsburg, Virginia. They closed the plant, and they moved our product to Canada.
So this, under the NAFTA bill that was approved in Congress, there was money in the NAFTA authorization that for retraining?
Yes.
And you're taking advantage of that?
Yes. And myself and about 20 other employees, former employees.
And what are you studying?
Well, I'm going to get an associate in social science. Because I had already begun under employee reimbursement.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I would just finish that out. And like your other caller said, that, you know, I don't have any other kind of college degree, that at least that would help me get a better job than I normally would. So
Look ahead to the job market and what you're trying to do, I mean, what does that look like?
Well, I live in a heavy tourist town. I don't know if you've ever heard of Colonial Williamsburg.
I have, and it's a great place to visit.
It is, and I decided that, you know, what better place to work than where I live. You know, I don't want to drive to Richmond, and I don't want to drive to Norfolk. I live right here, so, I mean, if the economy picks up and the tourists start coming, they'll start hiring people.
Hmm.
So I have, a vested interest all the way around.
Well, good luck, Peggy.
Well, thanks. I wish other people who get into this program a lot of luck, because there's a lot of hoops to jump through.
A government project? I'm surprised at that.
Oh, yeah. All right. Thanks, Neil.
Thanks, Peggy.
Bye-bye.
Mike Goldman, does that story sound familiar?
It sounds extremely familiar. And one thing I'd like to do, Neil, is I just want to clarify a couple of things that Stephen said there. I want to distinguish between the WIA programs and the Trade Adjustment Assistance programs. WIA does not really supply the kind of extended income support that Trade Adjustment Assistance does. And that's a significant criteria, if you will, for whether some people can even afford to engage in extensive retraining.
Okay. But even with retraining, we have prospects. Everybody has their hopes. But it sounds like finding a new job, at least again, until employment begins to catch up with the economy, finding a new job is hard for people. How do you deal with that?
Well, one of the things that we try to do with the Dislocated Worker Program, you mentioned a lot of these folks are longtime employees. They need to learn the new skills that it takes to find and successfully land a job out there in a changed job market.
Yeah, and it's awfully difficult to change, job cultures. If you worked in a factory, it's a little hard for a lot of people to adjust to an office job.
Change is always difficult for folks, but I think what I have seen is folks actually can come away from this experience reassured that they have the ability to adapt and to change. What they need are the tools to be successful job seekers.
Okay. Mike Goldman, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Neil.
Mike Goldman, the AFL-CIO liaison to dislocated workers in the state of Minnesota, and he was speaking with us from Arden Hills, just outside of St. Paul. And Stephen Greenhouse, his clarification, I guess, comes as no surprise for you. Tell us a little bit about the issues, one of the big issues that underpins these retraining programs, which is, of course, money.
Money. Now, with the phenomenon of offshoring, which is hitting a lot of well-educated, articulate, white-collar workers, they're jumping up and down saying, there isn't enough money for us.
Mm-hmm.
And even more than that, the existing Trade Adjustment Assistance Act really only provides benefits to manufacturing workers. So if you're a software engineer, you're not classified as a manufacturing worker. You're kind of classified as a service worker. So if your job, or if you have a call center job or an architecture job, and those jobs are offshore to India or China, you cannot get money under the Adjustment Assistance Act. So there's a big push now in Congress by some Democrats, and now some Republicans are joining in, to do two things. One, to increase the amount of money for job retraining, and two, to expand the definition of who can qualify under the Adjustment Assistance Act, so that not just manufacturing workers could qualify, but also, white-collar service workers like computer workers, architecture workers, accounting workers who lose their jobs to so-called offshoring to India, China, the Philippines.
Mm-hmm. Is there also a problem with, and again, we mentioned the Clinton-era program, the WIA, and now President Bush is pushing a different initiative with more or less the same pot of money. Some programs are scheduled to shut down, as I understand it, and funds moving to different kinds of programs?
Yes. The president is proposing more money for job training, yet at the same time he is reducing money for one-stop career centers, for migrant worker training, for youth opportunity grants. And, there are some people who say with all the dislocation in the economy, the United States needs much, much, much more money for training. Now, we do have a large deficit, and some people say as much as they would like to spend more money on training, they don't want to increase the deficit. So there's a big tug of war right now. But I think when United States Trade Representative Robert Zoellick testified in Congress a few weeks ago, he signaled a reverse in the administration's position and said, signaled that the administration was probably eager to spend a lot more on training, because I think both Republicans and Democrats alike see that this could become a big issue in the November campaign.
Let's get another caller on the line, and Rhea joins us from St. Louis.
Hi, I'm 59, and I've kind of lived with this phenomenon for most of my life. I have a full education. I started out in the academic world. I was teaching in a college. But then in the early 70s, there weren't any jobs anymore. And I was fortunate enough to luck into the computer field where I got trained on the job. Then I took early retirement a few years ago, and the job that I retired from is now being done in India. So at this point that I have to re-enter the workforce, I am on my own going to begin paralegal training this week at the local community college. I would have risked law school, but we don't have a state-supported one here, and the cost of private law school is just prohibitive. But I think we've just, I'm sanguine about getting a job, although it might not be an ideal job. But I worry now that people are selling retraining to these people who have had factory jobs and the like, and even a lot of the people that I worked with who went to college to get degrees that they could get jobs in the computer field did not get high-level software engineering jobs. They had majors like business data management. And that's the sort of thing that's getting offshored.
Yeah.
Need really high skills for the highest tech jobs. And I've got a comment. I'll be glad when the economist and financial analyst jobs start being offshored, because I am sick of listening to these guys on the media chirping cheerfully about how great the growth in productivity is.
They're getting about as popular as lawyers.
Yeah, just about. Okay. Well, thanks for listening to me.
Okay, Rhea. Thanks very much.
May I make a quick comment, Neil?
Sure, Stephen.
I think she's being smart because, for better or for worse, there are going to be a lot of legal jobs out there and a lot of paralegal jobs as well. And if she had stayed in high tech, maybe she would have found something. But as she said, a lot of high tech jobs are moving offshore.
Yeah, but I understand Bill Gates was visiting college campuses recently to drum up interest among students. Is there some good news on that front?
Well, that ties in with something you were asking about before. You know, what advice should one give 20-year-olds, 22-year-olds, 24-year-olds about what career courses to follow? Certainly, 6-8 years ago, the hottest major was computer engineering, software engineering, and now with the bubble burst in the technology field, and now with all these jobs being offshored, fewer Americans are majoring in computer engineering and software engineering. So lo and behold, Bill Gates went on what was basically a campaign tour, visiting Harvard and MIT and other schools, urging young, smart Americans, the so-called best and the brightest. He's telling them, hey, please, please, please major in computer engineering, software engineering. We are going to have a lot of jobs in this area. We might develop, great new technologies involving computers, and you'll be a winner if you major in that area. One quick last thought. I think one question we all have to ask is one better off if one retrains or doesn't retrain? I think generally, the more education one has, the better a chance one has in getting a job, a good job. Now, I think one caller talked about the caller from Virginia who was in the aeronautics industry, spent a lot of money of his own pocket for education, and it looks as if, unfortunately, he made a wrong bet. So it's great to get federal retraining money to help pay for your education rather than digging ourselves further into the hole as individuals.
Stephen Greenhouse covers labor and workplace issues for the New York Times. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us now is someone who runs a retraining program for laid-off workers. Mimi Maduro is regional director of the Dislocated Workers Program in Portland, Oregon. She joined us from her office there. Nice of you to be with us today.
Thanks, Neil. I appreciate being in touch with you.
The program you run serves the greater Portland area, which may be the hardest hit area in one of the hardest hit states. The area's unemployment rate is about 3% higher than the rest of the country, so you must have an awful lot of demand.
Yes, the volume it's been skyrocketing over the past 3 years, because our recession started here in 2000 and led to the highest unemployment rate in the nation. And we're currently at 8.2% unemployment in the Portland region.
Now, we see layoffs, as I understand it, high-tech industries. Intel has a big plant near there. Manufacturing, Boeing, are those the kinds of layoffs you see?
Yes, the two most hardest-hit industries here in the Portland area are high-tech and manufacturing. We've had a lot of hits in all of that, both of those industries.
And how is your program funded?
Our program is funded through the Workforce Investment Act, similar to what Mike was talking about in Minnesota.
And what services do you provide?
We provide a wide variety of employment and training services. The employment services that we've had to really get creative with the high volume of demand, and we do a lot of services by group. We have resume workshops, interview workshops, career exploration sessions. We also offer innovative approaches such as peer learning groups and peer support groups for our high-tech workers and our manufacturing workers.
Mm-hmm.
Recognizing that people learn from each other. We bring folks together and who are laid off, and we facilitate groups so they bring job leads and learn from each other and help each other get a job, realizing that there's just not enough money, time, or resources to talk to every unemployed worker, but we do a lot of work in groups and offer a lot of workshops, especially for folks to identify their transferable skills that they may not be able to see for themselves, that they could use some skills they have in one industry and easily transfer them to another industry.
And one question I wanted to ask you, and I wanted to bring Stephen Greenhouse in as well, though our time is short. Are you seeing people, again, things are pretty tough there in Portland and have been for a while. Are you seeing people who are moving away to look for jobs in other states? And Stephen, your part is this regional, but go ahead.
Well, actually, one of the reasons why we have such a high unemployment rate in the Portland area is that our population is growing. We have a very high, one of the highest percentages of the nation of 25 to 35-year-olds moving here. So we have a lot of job loss, but we also have a lot of people here who are moving here not because they have a job, but because it's a good place to live and they are excited about coming to live here.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an upside to that, is that we have a lot of young, highly educated workers looking for work. But the downside is that, you know, there's a lot of people who've been living here a long time who are also looking for work.
And Stephen, if you could help us out in 30 seconds or
Neil,
so.
Neil, you asked a good question. Clearly, you know, 10 years ago, a lot of people were moving to Silicon Valley because that was a boom area. 5 years ago, 8 years ago, people were moving to Wall Street because that was booming. Now it's unclear, you know, where does one move to? A lot of people are moving to Las Vegas because that's still doing pretty well. But I think a lot of young people, a lot of unemployed people, really don't know where to move. If they knew, if you're laid off in Ohio and here there's a job in Texas, you might move there. But Texas isn't booming, Ohio isn't booming. So people really don't know what to do except keep their fingers crossed and maybe retrain.
And I think we're going to have to leave it there. Mimi Maduro, thanks very much.
Thank you, Neil.
Mimi Maduro, Regional Director of Dislocated Workers Program in Portland, Oregon. Stephen Greenhouse covers labor and workplace issues for the New York Times. He was with us from New York City. Stephen, as always, thank you.
Thank you, Neil.
When we come back from a short break, we'll check in on the state of what's been happening with politics in the Caribbean. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.